You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. It's Friday, time for our reporter roundtable when we get you up to date on all the news that made headlines this last week. Our panel today, Kevin Richert with Idaho Ed News, James Dawson with Boise State Public Radio News, and Don Day with BoiseDev.com. Happy Friday. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
So we want to start with the first mayoral forum that we had this week with the candidates who are running for the Boise mayor. Conservation Voters of Idaho held this forum on Wednesday evening. And Jimmy, I kind of want you to set it up because you covered it for Boise State Public Radio News.
Right. So we had four candidates. Right now we have five who have officially filed for office. So we have incumbent Mayor Dave Beter, City Council President Lauren McClain, Adriel Martinez, Courtney Nielsen, and Wayne Ritchie, who filed on the first day that it was possible and was not included in that debate. But what I kind of took away from it, not a whole lot of specifics, really. I mean, we had general ideas of what these candidates wanted to do and things that, you know, we had really heard them say before. So nothing was too especially new. For example, Lauren McClain said that she wants to beat Dave Beter's goals on many things, including cutting single passenger car trips by 20% by 2029.
We know that by 2040, our valley will be at about 1 million people, and our transportation system is 20 years behind. So something has to give if we're going to grow sustainably.
We heard a lot of the candidates talk about their dedication to open space, new parks, public spaces, things like that. Mayor Dave Beter talked a lot about water security, didn't offer up too much. He also talked about and kind of referenced how he is wanting to shut down development, further development in the foothills.
Conservation and preserving areas are important, but you can't preserve them if you don't keep development out of them.
And then Adriel Martinez was really kind of focused on the idea of beefing up public transportation. He even threw out this idea of having buses run Monday through Saturday, 24 hours a day.
I actually wouldn't mind riding the bus, but our busing system here isn't very good compared to other cities in this country. And we have to make the busing system work for the people.
And Courtney Nielsen, I mean, she had like she talked about light rail, extending it out to Caldwell, and passing some kind of statewide vehicle emissions check, which she can't really do as Boise mayor, but she can lobby the state legislature to implement that. But other than that, she kind of thought that, hey, we should kind of just step back. Things are going to be okay.
We all want to save our planet, and we all want to take care of it. And I think baby steps are ideal.
And, Don, you watched the entire forum live, and you had people commenting during this. Tell me kind of what the vibe was and what people were saying.
Interesting and strange. So it's the first time that we've heard Lauren McClain and Dave Beter kind of go head-to-head. I go to city council every week, and I see them interact, but not on this kind of level. I had hoped they would mix it up a little bit more, and they didn't, which is probably to their credit, I think. A reporter likes to see them mix it up, but maybe politicians don't. It's clear that you have two very viable candidates. I was really interested to see Adriel Martinez really come to play and had a lot of good things and smart things to say, I think. And the fourth candidate, Courtney Nielsen, was clearly very nervous and said some things that I think surprised people. Jimmy didn't play the soundbite, but Gemma moderated this. I think we should mention that. We hadn't mentioned that yet. She asked a question about sprawl, which is a pretty big issue here in Boise. Ms. Nielsen was the fourth candidate to go, and she confessed that she didn't know what sprawl was. And so I think that puts some question towards viability of her candidacy at this point if she doesn't know what a basic thing that we're facing is. But back to the two top candidates, they really had some interesting things. Because it was a conservation forum, I was worried we weren't going to really get into growth and traffic and things, but they tie so directly to those that we
right.
really did. And it's interesting because earlier this spring, the city of Boise announced a clean energy goal by 2035 to have 100% of the energy in the city come from cleaner renewable sources. The mayor wanted 2040 as the deadline. Lauren McClain wanted 2035, and she actually kind of won the legislative victory there. In the forum, she actually said that she thinks it should be done by 2030. I was interested because the mayor kind of came back and said, well, we could do it tomorrow if we had billions of dollars, but money is important here too. So I'd be curious to see what the conservation voters do with who they endorse, because Lauren and Dave are very similar in a lot of their sort of policies, but their approaches are very different.
Go ahead, Jimmy, because I mean, that's what I noticed as well.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just interesting because you have to figure out what is actually viable here. We can keep throwing out dates for these target goals, right? But which is actually possible with the resources that the city of Boise has, or even the focus that a candidate might put toward that issue? I don't know. It's just something that I noticed for sure.
I think it's a signature issue we face over the next 10 to 15 years in Boise, because not only is climate change a really significant issue, I think nation and worldwide, but in Boise, because we're growing so much, our resources are being taxed. So we even take climate change out of it. Just the resources that we're going to need in terms of land and water and mm-hmm. air pollution are going to be a big thing. And the mayor of Boise plays a vital role in the region in trying to knit people together and trying to bring the different factions, whether they're the mayors of Meridian or the ACHD or Nampa and Caldwell. We're growing into one big city. We're not a bunch of little towns that are spread out. When I was a kid, I remember driving to Meridian. Now you just pass through and you're in Meridian.
Right.
And so we have to figure out how we're going to work together, and that's going to be the challenge for the mayor, whoever it may be coming up.
And we should note that on October 17th, there will be another forum happening. This is the neighborhood associations getting together. Oh, gee. So I will be doing that, too. apparently, I'm the moderator of choice for the Boise Mayor Forum. But this will also include city council members. So, again, we'll be hearing from the mayoral candidates as well as city council members, because there are seats up for grabs, and a lot of people have put their hat in the ring.
Yeah, and the filing deadline is not until next week, and I think we're going to see a bunch of people jump in, and a lot of people have said they're going to. And it's, you know, I remember Dave Frazier a few years ago, I've said this before in the show, of the Boise Guardian, would lament about no candidates and no opposed races, and not the case this year. Everybody's running, and it is going to be a fascinating thing. Holly Woodings, who's on the council, I mm-hmm. asked her, you know, are you glad you're not running this year? And she said, you know, what's so great is it shows how many cool people we have running. And I think that's a pretty smart point. There's just a lot of people with really different and diverse backgrounds that want to be on this council and help steer the future of Boise.
And so the next one, if you're interested, will be October 17th at Boise High School. There should be room for people, but with all of the candidates, I don't know if it's going to be enough room. Everybody is throwing their hat in the ring. All right, Kevin, let's bring you into the conversation, because there were actually other things that went on this week, one being some school bond elections that have happened.
Right. So while there was this forum about the November mayor's election, there were actually elections going on around the state. And it's a smattering. You had school elections in a handful of communities around the state. But let's start with one of the ones closest to home, Middleton. You had three school trustees on the ballot facing recall elections. They all survived, but they all survived barely. And the numbers get kind of wonky. I mean, one of the three trustees, Alicia McConkie, a majority of voters came out Tuesday night and said they wanted her off of the school board. But because only 115 people voted to recall her on Tuesday, and she got 120 votes 2 years ago when she was elected, she survived. I mean, by the skin
wow.
of her teeth. And the two other recall elections were a majority of voters voted to keep the other trustees, but barely, just by a couple of votes. So Middleton is clearly a community divided. There's a lot of split in this community about the direction the school district is going, just in time for a new superintendent to come on the job. So welcome to Middleton, yeah. Sharon Reberry.
Good luck.
You have your hands full there. It's going to be an interesting ride for Middleton. The other takeaway that I had quickly on the school elections Tuesday, you had seven bond issues across the state, and it's such a weird sampling of districts that it's hard to draw a big pattern, but six of the seven bond issues failed. Only one school district, Sugar Salem, way over in eastern Idaho, was able to get a bond issue through, and I don't want to read too much into that because it is seven school districts. What happens in Lakeland in North Idaho really doesn't have much to do with what happened in Shoshone or Bonneville. But that's interesting. And you've heard school officials talk many times about how difficult it is to get a two-thirds majority to pass mm-hmm. a bond issue. You really saw that on Tuesday.
And Sugar Salem, we should note, it's small. I mean,
it's small. It's rural. It's it's suburban Rexburg, if there is such a thing. But it is.
There is now.
There is now. And it's actually a growing district. It's an area that you've had some growth because that whole Rexburg area has been growing with the expansion of BYU-Idaho. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you can say that about, you know, the Bonneville School District is a fast-growing school district. They've had to run bond issues. They tried another one Tuesday, and they didn't even get a majority, let alone the two-thirds supermajority. They've got a long way to go if they're going to try to get community support behind a proposal.
So, Don, let's talk about what's going on with the master plan for Boise State University.
Yeah, so the university intends to file an update to its campus master plan with the city of Boise here in the coming weeks. They are doing some required neighborhood meetings right now. And it's not a massive overhaul. The last time they did this was in 2015, but there are lots of little tweaks. When I covered this the last time in 2015, for mm-hmm. instance, they were going to tear down Riverside Hall, which older folks know is the business building. They've backtracked on that, and it's now back on the plan. This was spurred by the reconfiguration of the campus in the area of the forthcoming baseball stadium. The city told school officials, you know what, that's significant enough. We need you to modify your permit and the comprehensive plan for the school. But then there's some other really interesting things, like they're looking at potentially building a parking garage attached to Albertson Stadium. And then just a whole rundown of little things, new buildings and changes. And this campus that we're, I guess, technically on right now constantly evolves and constantly changes. And so the planning for that and the future with population and student enrollment growth is really something to watch over the next few years.
Where, if they were to build this parking garage at Albertson Stadium, tell us, you know, geographically, where? Like, I'm assuming not by Broadway Street?
Actually, yes.
Or it would
so
be right there?
It would be on the east side, sort of adjacent to the chapel. The current rendering shows it actually attached to the stadium. I asked the folks who were putting this together over the school, and they said, you know, that may not be the final configuration. This is all visionary and may not come to pass, but that is the general idea for where they may put parking in the future. I think that would make football fans certainly pretty happy. Parking can be pretty tight there. But it's not clear if it's actually going to be an increase in parking or helping to supplant some of the surface parking lots that are starting to be gobbled up by buildings and green space around the campus.
Mm-hmm. Before we head into break, Jimmy, I want you to quickly talk about airlines in particular. As a lot of people may know, Alaska Airlines canceled the nonstop flight from Boise to Lewiston. A lot of people may not think this is that big of a deal. However, we had a fairly heated conversation in our newsroom about this.
Yeah.
And that is because there are now no direct flights from Boise to any other parts of the state of Idaho. So if you have to do business, let's say, in North Idaho, in Lewiston, there is no commercial direct flight anymore. So you cannot do business in a day and come back, or vice versa.
Right, right. I got to tell you, it's hard, y'all, being a Lewiston native and trying to visit family up there. It's a 5 to 6 hour car trip. I mean, anyone who's lived in this state for any amount of time knows it's huge. It takes a while to get places. And the news came out of Lewiston that this company was going to run charter flights from Lewiston to Boise twice a week, Mondays and Fridays, $644 round trip. But there are only 5 seats on these planes. They're pretty small. But they're trying to fill that hole. I mean, it's been about a year since Alaska's subsidiary pulled out of Lewiston. And so not only did that take out the Boise flight, but it took out the direct flight to Seattle from Lewiston as well. And this has been a huge thing in Lewiston, I can tell you, going back there a few times a year. But basically, right now, your options are Boise to Salt Lake to Lewiston, Boise to Seattle to Pullman, which is about a 45-minute drive back to Lewiston, or Boise to Spokane, and then you got to drive 2 hours south. Mm-hmm. If this is the winter, good luck, because those highways are not fun to drive.
And what we were talking about earlier today about this within the newsroom is that it is, when you think about business being done, but also our legislative session, because we have legislators from North Idaho who have to be at the State House.
Yes.
And there goes that flight. You have numerous individuals that work for the University of Idaho who live in the Treasure Valley, who then travel to the campus. There are also people that just have business. Mm-hmm. But yet, what we found was it Alaska that just made an announcement?
Starting in March.
That they are doing now direct flights between Boise and what
Los
other?
Los Angeles.
And L.A.
Yeah.
So, you can go out of state and do business for the day, but it's going to be really difficult to do that within the state.
Well, and we should say too, those flights, when I just took a look at them, I mean, they're priced at $200, you know, versus the cheapest flight I found was the Boise to Salt Lake to Lewiston direct. Well, you know, with one stop.
Indirect flight.
Indirect flight is a little over $500. If you wanted to go next week, it's going to cost you $800, you know, about as much as it's going to cost you to fly across the country or even some places abroad.
But at a certain point, I mean, Alaska is a business. So
absolutely.
If those routes were viable, we would have those routes. Alaska has, as a business decision, said, you know what? We can make money on Boise to L.A., but we can't make money on Boise to Lewiston. And so, I understand why people in Lewiston would be frustrated, but Alaska Airlines isn't a nonprofit.
Right, exactly.
They have to make money, and if they're not making money, they're not going to fly the route.
Their job is not to move our legislators back and forth.
You're totally right, but it's something that was brought up in the newsroom that these decisions do come back on taxpayers, though, because their travel is reimbursed at the cost to them. And so, you know, if you have three people in the district in Lewiston flying, you know, a couple times a week, maybe once a week.
Now on the charter flight,
that's going to rack up.
And there are solutions to this. The Sun Valley Marketing Alliance and the folks in Sun Valley have worked together to subsidize flights into Sun Valley from around the western region, and those are raised through public dollars. And so there are ways to do this. If it's really important, they can dig in and find ways to do that, but it's a tough deal.
So, Jimmy, some news came out yesterday about Medicaid waivers.
Yeah, so the state's if you remember back in April, I mean, it feels like it was yesterday for Kevin and me, perhaps, who spent our time down there. But the legislature passed, you know, this one bill that had several different parts to it regarding restrictions to Medicaid expansion. And one of them was to make it so people who were in the Medicaid expansion population, basically they're making 100% to 133% of federal poverty level, could stay on the state health exchange and buy their own insurance through that and still get a federal subsidy. And that waiver was rejected yesterday by the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, basically saying, you can't prove that this will not add to the federal deficit, so we can't approve it. That's just not something we can do. Governor Brad Little, House Speaker Scott Bedke, and Senate Pro Tem Brent Hill issued a statement saying they were disappointed and surprised and that the feds had pulled the rug out from under them. They said they've been working with CMS to try to get this. But if you think about the mechanics of this, if you keep those people on the health insurance exchange, that is totally borne by the federal government, whereas Medicaid expansion, 10% of that is getting paid by the state. And so the feds are like, well, we don't want to pay for all of that, right? And that's kind of how this is going down. You know, the state officials say that they're going to try to send them some more information on how, no, this is going to be okay. This is what you should do. Please approve it, you know, to try to get it approved. But I don't know. It certainly doesn't look likely.
Yeah. And it's just one more question mark looking at this budget and looking at this 2020 legislative session. I mean, we've already heard about how state revenues are down. Tax money coming into state coffers is down to the point where you have a conservative lawmaker like John Vanderwoude say, you know what, I don't think we can repeal the grocery tax next year. I don't think we have the money to do that. You have questions about whether you can do that. You have some big money proposals coming potentially from Governor Little's education task force. I mean, all-day kindergarten could cost tens of millions of dollars if you rolled that out. Expanding the teacher salary career ladder could cost tens of millions of dollars that the state probably doesn't have right now. So you factor uncertainty about Medicaid expansion and the state's cost of Medicaid expansion into this. It's going to be a gnarly session in terms of budget issues. There's a lot competing for what is now apparently a fairly limited stream of dollars.
Mm-hmm. And Kevin, I wanted to also talk about what's going on with the State Charter School Commission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. they have had a very they've had a very turbulent summer, and I wanted to do a story kind of taking a step back, looking at the future of this this commission. This is a body of seven appointees. They authorize 3/4 of the charter schools in the state. I mean, there are more than 16,000 kids going to charter schools that are authorized by this commission. So what they do is a big deal. They got into a lot of trouble earlier this summer with stemming from an executive session that they held in April. The audio from this meeting got leaked. Clearly, the commission violated the open meetings law. They went far afield of what they should have discussed in an executive session. That story, I feel, has kind of been done and dusted. Nobody is suggesting that they didn't break the law here. But you have some charter advocates want to see a house cleaning. They feel like they can't trust this commission anymore. They feel like this commission wants to close charter schools. You have other charter advocates saying, no, the commission actually is doing a pretty good job with a difficult job of authorizing charter schools, but then expecting these charter schools to show some performance in terms of student improvement, demonstrate how they're spending taxpayer dollars. So you have this real split within the charter community about who is going to govern charter schools in the state at a time when a lot of school districts don't want to even deal with licensing a charter school or authorizing a charter school. Universities have never had an interest in doing this. They can do that under state law, but universities have never wanted to take on the job of overseeing a charter school. So what goes on with this commission is a pretty big deal for the future of charter schools in the state. I broke out a long story about kind of where things go from here over at IdahoNews.org. Talked to some state leaders, including the governor. My sense is that there isn't a whole lot of appetite for an overhaul within the leadership of the state house. But this is one of those issues where you've got, you know, some charter advocates are really adamant that they want to see a house cleaning. They really want to see almost a bloodletting. And it all goes back to this this executive session that went badly awry.
So we've got like less than 5 minutes left in this, and I want to get to two things really quickly, and let's lighten up the mood a bit. Don, Trader Joe's coming to Meridian.
To quote Kevin, yeah.
Are they going to have a better parking lot?
Well, it's the parking lot that's already there. So better than downtown.
Well, there you go.
It's got
to
be.
Yeah, I mean, anything has to be, right?
Only can drive your Priuses. So Trader Joe's, I had actually reported this in April, but it was based on like one permit. And I was like, well, hopefully this is all right. But Trader Joe's will open in the former Rosauer's store on Eagle Road. Not the whole store. A few people have been like, that's a big Trader Joe's.
I was going to say, that's big.
They're going to split it, or they have split it in thirds.
Nice parking lot, though.
Yeah, big parking lot there.
They have free parking.
Yep.
Yeah, it's gonna be probably open in October. It sounds like maybe after the holidays. It sounds like they've kind of got a situation where they've got to get open by middle of October, or it has to wait until after Christmas. But build out is underway. Trader Joe's has not announced this. Trader Joe's does not like to announce things until they are good and ready. When they came to Boise, they told all the media it wasn't happening, but Boise Weekly, who
was like, really?
Was right across the street and was part of a neighborhood meeting, was able to get the scoop on that. So that didn't work out as well for Trader Joe's in that situation as they would have liked. And in this particular instance, there's a whole bunch of building permits that are filed with TJ's name on it. So if you like it, you're going to get it soon on Eagle Road.
And Kevin, wrap us up with what in the world happened with the comedian Gallagher going to the state house. Okay, I've got to wrap up at 12:36. So we've got about 3.5 minutes.
Okay, well, we can't do the whole story justice. John Sowell of the Idaho Statesman had the story, and there's a lot of story there. There's a lot of Gallagher has a lot of things to say about a lot of things. But to make a long story short, Gallagher went to the state house looking for a state film commission that doesn't exist.
One.
But what he did find was apparently security that did not take well to a sledgehammer wielding person.
Two sledgehammers.
Oh, two sledgehammers. Okay.
Because
that may have been the tipping point. The right. Second sledgehammer may have been the thing.
Because if people know who Gallagher is, I mean, part of his.
The sledge-o-matic.
Yeah. And he takes like watermelons and things like that, and so he decided it was a good idea to walk into the state house.
Wear glasses and a poncho if you're in the front row of one of those shows.
Yes. Yeah.
Was he in town for something? Like for for a show?
Apparently he's looking at some business opportunities in the Treasure Valley. I don't know how actively he's going to look at it after this. I mean, there's a lot there. I mean,
what, a watermelon stand? I mean, what?
Who knows? I mean, we do grow watermelons around here. I mean, this is one of these stories that leaves me with more questions than answers because, you know, what does this mean for other 70s era comedians? I mean, I was thinking of Ray J. Johnson Jr. You know, you can call me Ray, you can call me Jay, but you got to call security because we don't want you. I don't know. And what happens, is there going to be a test case on sledgehammers in the State House?
Right. Well, I was looking up the actual code for what is a deadly weapon, and I was like, can this sledgehammer actually fit into that? Maybe. I don't know. But, I mean, a lot of his ideas were really interesting, like a retirement home for old movie stars and celebrities to co-mingle with, you know, retirees in the Treasure Valley and really hooking people up.
You're going to get old celebrities to move to Boise?
Huh?
I mean, might.
With that LAX flight, maybe.
Something. Oh, that.
Yeah, but one of the State House traditions is at the end of the legislative session, reporters wearing ugly ties as a signal that they are ready to go home and the legislature should follow suit. Will the sledgehammer become the ugly tie of the future? I mean, do we get to a stage in the session where it's so late that we're just
going to... You bring a sledgehammer in?
You know, lobbyists or legislators or reporters just wield a sledgehammer, carry one.
Real question, you can bring a gun.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Can you bring a gun,
and that
but
is
you
a serious
can't bring
point.
A sledgehammer?
I mean that seriously.
We spend time in the State House, Jimmy and I, you see folks clearly armed and clearly rather heavily armed.
And it's also easier to see the big sledgehammer from Gallagher. I'm just saying.
You can't conceal a sledgehammer.
Exactly.
You can't.
Read the article, The Idaho Statesman, for more on that. And Gallagher, thanks, you guys. Kevin Richer with Idaho Ed News, Jimmy Dawson with Boise State Public Radio News, and Don Day with BoiseDev.com. I love Fridays and the Reporter Roundtable. We'll be back. You're listening to Idaho Matters.